couple of years.
Is that right?
I guess, you know, because I had lost personal contact with him from the early 30s until, my goodness, it was 25 years anyway, I guess, in there that I knew where he was all the time. He was in the news enough and I kept track of him and so on. Mm-hmm. You know, he knew that I was in Vancouver, too. I think this was sort of a vicarious acquaintance renewal through Diefenbaker, because I was acquainted with Diefenbaker and spoke of Perks on occasion. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this has been lovely. Certainly that you fill in that gap beautifully for the early period. I mean, he has told me a fair amount, but you've given me a much greater and a much wider canvas on which I can draw.
There might be one thing I would add about that period as I look at it now. We were aware, of course, anybody who came back from the war that was in one piece was in that war was pretty lucky.
Yeah, I know.
We were always curious about, we were very proud of Perks having been a VC and having liberally decorated. I think we were able to string off pretty accurately what his decorations were and so on. But we could never get him to talk about that phase of his war life at all. And occasionally we used to just corner him and say, now, come on, let's have the story. At least give us the story about the VC, you know. And he'd say, all right, I will. I'll tell you the facts. And the facts were these. He said, I got a message to show up at a certain place at a certain time. And he said, there was nothing else for it. I had to obey orders. And he said, I showed up at a certain place at a certain time, and it was Buckingham Palace, and the king was there, and he pinned that medal on me. That's as much as we ever got out of him about any of his feats in battle that had anything to do with his own personal courage. And finally, along about maybe during that time, or I think it was during that time, that a book came out on the VCs. And somebody found this thing in the library, or we were able to dig it up and get the actual fact of, excuse me, of how he, what he did on that particular occasion.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I believe, and my recollection is that he single-handed attacked machine gun nests or something of that kind.
Well, he was in the forefront all the time.
Yeah.
He didn't go in by himself. He went in with his battalion, but he was up out of the front line at Passchendaele, if you want to call front line at Passchendaele, just a series of shell holes.
Mm-hmm.
And he took the unit over. He'd been out of the trench only about 1 or 2 minutes when he was wounded. Actually, wounded in the rump.
Yeah.
And, you know, a good piece of shrapnel just in by his shirt tail. But by God, he carried on.
Mm-hmm.
And he fought his battalion with them, around them, against the Jerrys who were in concrete pillboxes, and so on, all day. All day. Wounded like that.
Mm-hmm.
He went in, I don't know, shall we say, with about 800 men. I think he came out with about 50. And there's no getting around it. I mean, the bravest man there was himself.
Mm-hmm.
At the front, constantly, all the time, sending back messages and just tremendous. Just incredible just to hear him talk about it. And I had, when we were discussing this on the tape recorder, I had the war diary.
Uh-huh.
And I had the official account. And I had his VC citation, so I knew fairly well, you know, just what
battery
was going
now.
On. Yes, and I had the map there, so that I could stir him and simulate him and all the rest of it. And he did begin to talk. And just sitting there in his den up at Government House, my hair began to raise right on my head like that. Because I've seen action in Italy and in France and Germany myself and in the Second World War. But by the Lord, Harry.
Well, when he was younger, he wouldn't talk about And in fact, I thought he was indifferent about it.
Mm-hmm.
We used to take on the job of polishing his shoes, his boots, the riding boots. We'd go by his apartment. He never locked the place, and we all had the run of it. It was his apartment was the office of the Boy Scout troop. He had a stack of books there, and they were for anybody to read.
Yeah.
And we had nothing to do. We went over to Perk's place, and whether he was there or not. And, we were at a complete run of the place. I think we'd rummage through the drawers, or anything he had there was, anything of his was ours.
Mm-hmm.
He had a few war trophies, you might call them. I remember he had a sword we always used to play around with, and he had some grenades that had been defused, and his decorations were lying around there. We were always playing around with those things. They weren't locked up or put away with any thought of security at all. I can remember all this stuff, and his we were always trying on his uniforms or any of his equipment, you know. I don't recall even a reprimand if he came in and the place would just be in a turmoil with half a dozen or a dozen kids roughhousing all over the place, you know, and the only person ever raised hell would be the caretaker of the apartment who would come in and tell us get out raise the devil with us for making so much racket and so on, you know. But we'd be all over the place.
Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah. I say maybe as he get it now, of course he could be much more objective about it in talking about his war experiences, but we got very little of that from him. We had to dig it out from others. We were conscious of him having been wounded. This was not the only wound.
I know.
Shrapnel in the rump.
Yeah. Yes, you'd see it when he went in bathing or something like that.
Yeah. He must have had something right through the middle of his chest.
That's right. He had a big one right here.
Yes.
His arm.
Yes.
That same one, it went either down or up, like this, and tore the devil out of him inside.
Well, I remember him telling us that he had no spleen. Did you ever hear
that's
that?
That's right, yes. Something of this.
He said he... I remember him telling us as a joke on himself that he was a man without a spleen, that it got damaged in some way or other, and so the doctor just took it out and threw it away. He said, you don't need that. He's the only person I ever heard of that didn't have a spleen. I guess it's not terribly uncommon, but I've often... think of this when I think of hear the word splenetic, you know. Without your spleen, you've got to be good-natured, because he was the best-natured person you could imagine, you know.
He still is.
Yeah.
He still is.
Yeah. He had no spleen to rise in case of anger.
My God.
I never saw the man in anger. He could be stern, but... No, I never saw him in anger. I remember one time he could get damn stern with a horse. When during this period where I was learning to ride, I got on a horse that had been full of oats and hadn't been out of the stable for quite a while. This horse was uncontrollable and ran away with me. I just couldn't hold it. And I did probably a very foolish thing, but I ran it against a fence. I'd seen an Indian do this with a wild horse and knew the only way he could get off was to run this horse against a fence. And I ran this horse right into a corner against a fence. And of course the horse stopped and when it planted all feet and I went off.
Mm-hmm.
And Perks was nearby and on another horse, and he came up and we caught the horse. My face was all scraped and bleeding and so on. And he got on this horse, and he gave it a real time. I'll tell you, that horse was not running away after he'd finished with it. But not in any, he wasn't cruel with the thing or anything like that, but he got on this horse, and obviously he said, okay, you want to run, come on, let's go. And he ran the horse until she was well settled down, and then came back, and I got on her again. But he was kind of furious in a way with this animal, but it was just not the horse's fault, and it was my fault that I did what I did. I should have taken off in another direction and run the horse out myself, I guess, but
well, this is lovely.
I suppose I was only 13 or 14. I was small for my age, and I didn't do my growing until I was, as you can see in these pictures, I was one of the runts in that group. I was one of the last of my age or year to get long pants, I think. A great hole in.
Well, this is just the sort of thing I wanted. Just the sort of thing.
Oh, good.
Now, I'll shut this off now.